Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. Thank you for joining us. And today we have a very special guest. But before I introduce him, let you know that behind the microphone, as usual, we have Luke. Say hi.
Hello, everyone.
And with me today on the sofa is Carrie Hishon.
Hello.
And Matt Stewart.
I'm back.
Yay.
Whee.
And to introduce to our listeners out there, I'm so very, very pleased and excited and beside myself with joy to be able to say that we have Steve Swanson. Steve Swanson is a web designer, a podcaster, a major Disney fan, a huge Muppet fan, a musician, a teacher, and for you listeners out there, he's the inspiration for why this whole thing got started and why we're doing this podcast. So I'm so very pleased to welcome today Steve Swanson.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. How are you?
Good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Steve.
It really is. We're
That's very humbling to know that this hall that's thank you very much.
Yeah. Don't worry, we'll talk lots about it, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure. Okay. We'll start off there, but as per usual, I'd like to always ask our guests to introduce themselves to our listener audience and maybe say a little bit about who they are, what their passion is, and what sort of brought you to our microphone today.
Okay, all right, sure. Well, my name is Steve Swanson. I'm the host of the Muppet Cast, which is the longest running and I think only second now podcast dedicated to the work of Jim Henson and the Muppets. There's another one that a buddy of mine also started up, and we'll get to that story too, I'm sure. But yes, the Muppet Cast can be found at MuppetCast.com, and it's all over Twitter and Facebook, and it's been around for over 5 years now, which is just amazing to me. But yeah, we have a lot of fun talking about Muppets and with Muppets, and we do some Muppet news from time to time and a lot of listener feedback. I'm a huge music fan, so for me it's all about Muppet music as well, so we include a lot of that good stuff too. And so that's the Muppet side of the house. We just have a lot of fun almost every week over there on the Muppet Cast, doing all sorts of Muppet chats and comparison lists and all, just whatever kind of strikes our fancy at the time. But it's a very listener-driven show, so if you're a Muppet fan and you've got some comments or questions and some opinions or something fun you want to do with the Muppets, check out the show. I think you're really going to enjoy it. I'm also, like you said, a huge Disney fan, and very recently I began a new sort of creative outlet online called onefansdream.com, which is, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's basically celebrating the challenges, the struggles, and the triumphs that we Disney fans face in the things that we want to do in life. You know, so many of us are inspired by people like Walt Disney and Jim Henson, and people who are still around today. John Lasseter is another big hero of mine. People who have this wonderful creative vision, and not only that, but have the determination to make their dreams come true. And that's sort of what One Fan's Dream is all about. Is right now it's just sort of chronicling my life and the events that go on in it, strange and weird as they are sometimes, and my own personal goals and the things that I've already achieved and the things that I want to achieve next, and how I'm personally going about that. And I hope that I'm inspiring some other people as well.
I think that's why we're here.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're getting into that. But no, I'm also hoping to bring on other people and get other people to help join me in that dream and kind of inspiring other people as well. And I know that this show does some of that. And Karis, I know some of your writing does some of that too. And I think that's really, really awesome.
Thank you.
Read over. Yeah, absolutely.
And, sort of what we're all about here. When I decided that I wanted to do a podcast, you sort of cast around and think, well, what the heck am I going to talk about? What's going to be interesting to people?
Right.
And I don't think that you'd started One Fan's Dream yet because you had not returned to the Muppet Cast. as of yet. And I just wanted, I didn't want to duplicate the same things, but I wanted to have some sort of tie-in. And so hence the talking about the inspiration and people who inspire you, or just your artistic endeavors and how you get that creative process going. So that's what we talk about every time we have a guest on our show. So with getting your podcast originally started, and then when you sort of rejuvenated it in this past little while, what would you say was harder? Was it easier to start it, or was it toughest to start it, or was it toughest to stop it and then restart it? And what sort of brought you back to it?
Okay, this is a good question. So here's how I'm going to answer it. I sort of look at that because I've thought about that a lot, actually. There's sort of four main areas in that question that I can cover. It was very easy to start the podcast in the beginning, comparatively. Back in 2007, April 2007 is when this thing actually got off the ground. And at the time, I was just a big fan of podcasting in general. I mean, podcasts are still huge today. In fact, they are arguably bigger today than they were back in 2007.
For sure, yeah.
But I was a big Disney fan and still am back then. And there were a lot of Disney podcasts coming online. And I thought, you know, I could do one of those, but I just don't want to be another voice in the crowd. So right. I'm a huge Muppet fan. Let's try a show about that and see if that takes off. And of course it did. But to begin the show, like I said, it was actually quite easy. The only hard part for me was learning some of the surrounding technology. The actual audio production itself was quite easy because I'd been doing that for a long time. Right. I've recorded four albums in my life. So I've done a lot of recording and editing and that kind of stuff. So a podcast to me is a lot like just recording and editing and mixing a song together. You've got your vocals, you've got your music. And those are your main elements. And then you, with a podcast, those sort of interplay a lot more. But the concept is the same. So the software that I use to create the Muppet Cast is the same stuff I use to create any other song or any other album that I've done. I just use it on a weekly basis now, a lot more frequently.
Right.
But what was difficult for me was learning, what's WordPress? What's iTunes? How do I get something that I produce into iTunes and all that kind of stuff?
And that's why we have Luke.
Okay. Yeah. See, I didn't have a Luke of my own.
No, you had to be your own Luke.
I had to be my own Luke.
Yeah.
And find out, you know, just how WordPress works and what plugins were and all this sort of stuff. But over a short span of time, and I'm a fairly adept person when it comes to technology as well. So it was just maybe an afternoon or two of reading around, and I could at least get a rudimentary website up and running and something going, you know, something to present to the world, the audio content that I was recording. And it's funny, you know, you go to someplace like archive.org and you can type in your own website if it's been there for a while, and you can look at your website as it was throughout the years. And I look at that back then, now, the 2007 version of MuppetCast.com. And you just go, oh, wow.
What was I thinking?
That's a scary website.
What was I thinking? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, the archive.org is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just do so much more with it. But so to begin the actual show was very easy. To end it back in January 2011 was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Because I really do love the show. And I loved it very dearly back then as well. But things just kind of got to the point where... and you felt this before with creative endeavors, just things get a little stale.
Yep.
And it gets a little bit, you know, I just don't have a show in me this week, but I got to sit down here and tough it out for a few hours and see if I can do something. Well, that just got to be a little laborious.
And a responsibility instead of a joy.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So around this time last year, this was even before the new film came out. I had made the decision at that point in November 2011 that this was going to go away. And that was a tough decision to make. But I've said this before, but I don't know how many people really know it. I happen to script out a lot of things that I say on the Muppet Cast.
Right.
It sounds like I'm just speaking. I just happen to be really good at reading so it sounds conversational.
So, that's a good skill to have.
In fact, I'm reading all of this right now.
Oh, really? You anticipated our question.
Yes, exactly.
He's that good, folks. He's that good.
But I started scripting out the final episode of the Muppet Cast because if that's your finale, like that's the last opportunity you have to say anything. So I wanted, there was no way that I could adequately thank all of these incredible listeners, both people that I had become very good friends with because of the show. And that's another thing, you know, you become friends because of the purpose of what you've been doing. Well, now you're not going to do that anymore. Are you still going to be friends with those people? Mm. Are they going to go away? Like there were just, there were a lot of just questions and issues that weighed very heavily on that decision. But it took from just about Thanksgiving of last year to January. I mean, I was scripting right up until the recording of that episode. So it took a couple months to make sure that I really as perfectly said as I could everything that I needed to say. So that was very, very difficult. And then, you know, the weeks after that, suddenly Sunday afternoon is very different after that. I'm not recording and not doing anything around that. And what I found was I happen to keep a lot of I juggle a lot of things in the air at once. You know, I've got the Muppet Cast, which is not only, you know, the audio recording, but it's also all the web stuff. It's all the publicity online. It's all the social media. I'm also a voice teacher. So almost every evening and weekend, I'm at a studio near my house teaching kids for several hours.
You have
every
a recital
day.
Coming up.
I got a recital coming up. That's right. You saw the web flyer out there.
Of course I did.
I expect to see you there.
Oh, okay.
Road trip. And,
yes.
Just a short drive away.
For sure.
And, so there's that. And then, of course, I'm also writing and recording a couple projects right now. And I have a normal day job on top of all that in my spare time. So
the day job
there's just
is
many,
time.
Many things. And to subtract the Muppet Cast from that, I thought was going to leave more time with that. But no, something else just comes up.
No, yeah.
It just always happens with
you
me,
just
you know?
Fill it.
It's something fills it. Yeah, you don't, of course you don't have that extra free time. That's just, you're going to be doing something else.
And it might be something that you don't like.
That's what can definitely happen. Yep. And for me, it was just other things. The other things in life sort of just expanded a bit and got a bit bigger to fill that hole, which is not what I intended to happen. What I also didn't quite intend to happen, but again, I alluded to this, I was a little afraid that I was going to fall out of contact with some of the people that I talked with as a consequence of doing the show.
Sure.
I felt like I lost a little of my foothold in the fan community and some of those folks that I really loved talking with and being friends with. And it wasn't out of any kind of, you know, superficiality or anything like that. It was just... you know, I just wasn't there to be doing what I was doing. And that was the difference. And I genuinely missed that. And so I made some decisions that, you know, I'm not going to kill myself to do the show exactly like I did before. Because I really did stress myself out a lot of those things. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to do it differently. And the show is just going to be done more my way. And if I want to change things, I'm going to change it. But it's just going to flow a lot more naturally.
Sure.
As a creative extension of who I already am.
I think that comes through.
Yeah, yeah. And I think One Fan's Dream, my writing and my mindset around all of that sort of fed into that decision as well. So it was very easy to bring the show back again because at that point I knew what it was going to be, you know, and the show already had all of this history behind it. So it was easy to sort of just pick that back up and carry it forward. And, of course, everyone was really happy that the show came back, most of all me. So, and the fourth area would be just, you know, today we're several months into it. And I'm as happy as I've ever been doing the show. You know, I haven't felt any real stress about, well, you know, I mean, just this past week. I mean, it's been several weeks now since we've recorded this segment. But this past week... you know, I didn't have a show out and, you know, I felt bad about it for about 30 seconds. And then realized, it's not a huge deal. You know, I've got content for the next week and we'll just do that. So it's been really great. Life is still very, very busy. And my constant project right now and has been for some time, is just looking for those little areas in life where I can sort of minimize the clutter and simplify and scale back. Mm-hmm. And so the Muppet Cast is part of that, but it's not so much can I scale back the Muppet Cast, because that's something I really love. It's what other things that sort of clutter into the Muppet Cast can I scale back in to allow for more of my enjoyment mm-hmm. with that mm-hmm. part of my life.
Yeah, I'd say I've noticed since you returned that you used to have some shows that would be a good 2 hours, maybe more than 2 hours, and it seems like you're much more satisfied with something that's maybe a little less than an hour nowadays, or if it's a bit longer, no big deal. Like it comes across in your podcast that you seem more relaxed as a presenter. If that
Thank
makes
you.
Sense.
I feel this. That I'm glad it comes through, because that's exactly how I feel. Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you a little story. In my past year, obviously the Muppets came out in last November, just a year ago, and my friends and family who knew I was a Muppet fan didn't quite realize the extent of it. And when the film came out, I finally discovered all of these other avenues of expressing the joy that they bring. And I started to mention Muppets in almost every single sentence. But, right, guys?
That's true.
Right.
It's very true.
but at the same time, I'm a high school teacher, and I had been teaching here in town in London, but last year I was moved to a country school. So I have a 40-minute commute each way, which I do not enjoy. And it can be very stressful in Canadian winters to do that.
Well, I've done that, actually. Yeah. My first teaching gig was a good hour, 45 minutes away from me. Yeah.
Right. And in Columbus, it's pretty similar in the sort of weather situation. And
yeah.
And when the springtime, or very early springtime, rolled around, it was getting very difficult to do the drive. It was emotionally draining. I don't enjoy driving that much. To begin with, I'm not one of those people who just really likes it. It's not a place where I decompress, or that just doesn't happen for me. And I was asking friends on Facebook for something, and people said, "Oh, books on tape." And I tried that, and that didn't work. It just distracted me, because I like to let the words imagine in my head, and I like to voice it myself.
It's not a good thing to do when you're driving.
No, you want to be focused. All. And then one friend, God bless her, said podcast, podcast, podcast. And I'm like, okay, give me some pointers. Because, I mean, I knew I'd heard of them, but I wasn't really a podcast listener. And then she said, any subject you want, go out there, find one. There'll be something on stuff that you like. I'm like, you're kidding. There'll be a Muppet podcast thing out there? And the first one I found was not yours. It was the Henson.com podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
But I burned through those really fast, because There's a finite number of them, and a lot of them are like 5 minutes and 20 minutes and things like that. And then I was like, oh, no, now what am I going to do? And then I found yours. And not knowing anything, I started in the sort of more recent ones. So in the early spring, one of the podcasts I was listening to was the one entitled Have Fun. And I did not know what I was letting myself in for.
Oh, no.
So I almost had to. I'm telling you this for reals. This is absolute truth here. I almost had to pull over for the side of the road because of the tears that were streaming down my face.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah.
My friends are laughing at me here because they know it's the truth. Here I am driving to school, just found you, and you're leaving me. But you came back, so...
I'm so heartless.
I just think it's ironic that it's 1 year later, and from when you decided to go off the air, and now here I am interviewing you, and isn't that amazing how the whole world can change in 1 year?
I was going to say, isn't that just amazing? Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So, Steve, with everything that you just explained about how you got into podcasting and your kind of process that you have with it, what advice would you give to newcomers to the podcasting community who want to get into it and maybe start their own? Like, what would you suggest that they start out doing?
make sure that you don't have any sort of social life, because you certainly won't have one once you start a show.
Unless you do it with your social.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
This
that's why we did it with our social group.
Yeah, this is our social life.
You can take that tack if you want it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it, well, I mean, it's the first thing is, you know, if I've seen some shows where, and it's only a few, where it's sort of a personality-driven show, where it's a show just sort of about someone's life. In fact, that's one of the first shows that I ever personally heard, and you guys may be familiar with it too, Adam Curry's Daily Source Code.
I've heard of it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, I think it may have been the first podcast, if not one of the first ones. And it was just sort of about Adam Curry and his life, and of course he had the personality to sort of carry that show as well. And there are certain ones that are like that, but it the same thing sort of happens with blogs. You know, there are certain blogs that are just about people's lives, and they happen to be able to do that. But then you get millions of other blogs that other people just make about their lives that aren't quite as interesting, and they don't really generate the audience because it's there's just not the personal interest there. And I think a lot of podcasts sort of do that as well. And there are some podcasters who are really great people. And I've talked with a lot of them, and they sort of struggle, though, in that in finding the what their niche is and what their show is about. They know they want to do a podcast. They're just not sure what they want to do it about. And I would say give a lot of thought to what are you really passionate about, and what can you – not necessarily what can you make other people passionate about, because I wouldn't even say that what I do with the Muppet Cast is meant to make anyone else a Muppet fan. It really just celebrates our fandom. So I guess that's the question I would ask someone to really look inside themselves and see, too. Like, what can you really celebrate in your life that you want to share with other people?
Now, Steve, do you find,
what kind of joy can you bring to other people from something in your own life?
Do you find the, like, I know we kind of addressed this a little bit earlier with, like, the weekly deadlines thing. You don't shackle yourself to them now, but do you think that was like a factor before in why you said that you felt it was getting, you know, like routine, like the having to do it every week? We really don't have a schedule here on the Lovers of Dreamers and You, but I think that helps us be more like spontaneous and in the moment when we're doing it. Is that something that you would advise, like doing the weekly thing? Is that,
I think that really depends on how you work creatively. I think I can do it now because I still give myself, it's still a loose deadline that I have. I do enjoy having new content out there every week, because it gives me something new to talk about with all my friends, and it gives everyone else listening something new to enjoy as well. And that's, I just enjoy creatively giving like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't kind of hold that deadline looming over my head, although, see, my own personal style, I find that I do work better with a deadline. If I don't have a deadline, we might be up to show number 6 at this point.
Oh,
that was a good show. Show 6 was a very good show.
Right. And that was a good one, too, I know. But but then again, some people don't need a deadline, and they can just go and go and go. So I think it depends on your own personal style. And if you're not sure what that style is, if you want to start a podcast, go for it, because you'll find out what that style is very quickly. And that's a good thing. I've learned so many things about myself in all aspects of life from doing the Muppet Cast, not even relating to the Muppets. I'm just talking about, you know, who I am as a person, who I am creatively, spiritually, what kind of friend I am to people. I mean, it's great. It's a great teaching tool for you. And it is also, of course, a gift to your audience. But that's the thing. For me, I guess, at least, I've just learned how I work. So it was good to have those deadlines and that weekly deadline at the beginning of the show, certainly, because that kept me very busy. It kept me sort of continually honing my skills as a podcaster in all aspects of what we have to do.
Yeah.
So now, over 5 years later, I can kind of coast, but I wouldn't recommend that for a beginning podcaster.
Oh, see, I'm the same way when it comes to blogging, especially. I have to have a deadline. I have to give myself some sort of limit, or otherwise I can just not do anything for months, and then I come back and feel guilty and go, oh, well, I should have been doing something. So I really work well with deadlines myself.
Yeah.
And then there's that difficulty when you've given yourself that, you've given yourself the deadline and then you're like, it's Friday, I'm supposed to blog, but I have nothing to say today. I have nothing to give.
That's
right?
When I do a whole post of links.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
on my blog, I apologize
for that, everyone. I thought I turned that off.
On my blog, I have a column that I call Linktastic, and then I just choose a theme and start Googling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that, yeah.
At least you're still sharing.
I'll also say that it's good to have those deadlines, but at the same time, and this is something I've sort of learned for this, I guess, second round of the show, as we could call it, you have to give yourself permission to fail as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And make mistakes.
If I don't have a show out, I have to be able to say, you know what, that's okay. You know, you're not a bad podcaster. You're not creatively devoid this week. You just, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'll just get it next time.
Well, it's the same in everything that's creative. Oh, yeah. The first mm-hmm. puppet I made with Michael Earle, I was really happy about making a puppet, and then I was not happy with the way she turned out. And then you quickly realize when you go to the fabric store, it's like, who cares? I can make 17 more.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is, and I got really hung up on that for a while with the show. Again, if I didn't have something out there, you know, you just kind of, you know, push and push and push. And that's definitely not what you want to do. And of course, I learned that very quickly. And I think anyone really does. The more you try and fail with that, you just have to be okay with it.
Yeah. So the common theme sounds like do it for yourself, make yourself happy, and then you'll be happy with your podcast or whatever you're doing creatively and continue on with that.
And your audience will be happy.
And then that'll feed into your audience. Mm-hmm. And that's how to go.
Don't audiences pick up on that. Absolutely.
Exactly. Don't try to force it.
I get emails very frequently from people saying, wow, you sounded tired this week. You sound exhausted, you know, or that,
really?
Or that kind of stuff. Oh. Like, you know, and you know what? They call it every time. An audience is a genius with that. Yeah.
Lord, help me if I ever criticize you like that.
That is not cool.
Wow. No. I know, Carrie, before you came online with us, Carrie and I were chatting about your One Fan's Dream post about Disney fan versus Muppet fan, right, Carrie?
Yeah, I was reading that one. I actually went through when I found out we were going to interview you, I went through One Fan's Dream and read like every single blog post. And I was like, yes, we have something in common. I'm a former Disney cast member and your wife is a former Disney cast member, which is pretty cool. And yeah, we're reading about being a Muppet fan versus being a Disney fan and how sometimes they overlap and sometimes they don't. And I would consider myself more of a Disney fan, hence just because I worked there.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I also do enjoy the Muppets too. And
Animal very much.
Animal very much is my favorite. So for you, I would assume you're probably more Muppet fan, but Disney as well. With like you went into that in your blog post.
Yeah, I think my fandom is a little bit differently. I express it a little bit differently on both sides of the house. With the Muppet side, I think is my more sort of zany and off the wall, and sort of creative side. I look at that. I look at the Muppets as sort of more I'm way more of an introvert than an extrovert. But the Muppets is sort of my extroverted creative side, because I get to be that every week on the show. So there's that. But then, see, my Disney fandom is a lot of more of my sort of sentimental, historical, my sort of, it's still creative, but it's a more inwardly creative. And a little, like, I look at the history of Disney.
Yeah.
You know, the company has a very rich history to everything, and you look through all the different movies and shows and productions and sort of how that forms and shapes itself in the parks, in which you can visually experience and see right in front of you. And that's sort of the difference, is there's a small version of that we can experience in person with the Muppets, and that's, of course, very, very enjoyable and really probably my favorite area of the parks. But all the rest of it, you know, you still sort of have that nostalgia. I love Main Street USA. There's no rides to ride. There's not a whole lot to do except if you want to go and shop and buy a bunch of merchandise. But just walking around mm-hmm. that area, you get a certain feeling to it.
Oh, you're absolutely immersed in it. It's an experience.
My favorite feeling in all of Disney World is literally walking right down the middle of Main Street USA.
Mm-hmm. I have so many memories of Main Street USA because that's where I was stationed, I guess. That's where I worked when I was there. I was in international college program,
mm-hmm.
and back in 2005, and it was so. It's hard to explain because you're there.
It is.
At the very beginning, you're the first people they see, the guests see when they come in the park. You're the last people that they see when they leave. And you want to make that such a special experience for the people coming in. And it really is. You cross in and it's a different experience.
I was going to say, I've got a better way to explain my Muppet versus Disney fandom.
Okay,
here it is. Okay, so... The Muppet, my Muppet fandom is everything that's zany and sort of has an edge and is sort of like imperfect. Like, we love the Muppets because everything blows up.
Right.
Yes.
And there's penguins and chickens flying.
Penguins go flying.
Things are exploding. Okay, so that I love the Muppets for their imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
I love Disney for the sense of, it's sort of a faux perfection, but for that sense of calm and perfection that it gives me. That's the difference for me.
Pristine.
I was going to, I was almost going to say something like that. Is that like the Disney thing for me is almost like an album that is really well produced. Like it's so perfect, but you enjoy it for that. It's not overproduced. It's just perfect. And then the Muppets is that garage band that produced a perfect album by accident, but it was amazing anyways.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah.
So
it's like Disney is Mozart. And the Muppets are, they might be giants.
Yes.
So how many times have you been to the parks?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I...
Too many.
I'm sure you've been there more, but I've been there an awful lot. Yeah.
I don't think so.
I saw the Spectra Magic Parade 78 times.
Wow.
In that summer, wow. I counted because there were some nights where we had the extra magic hours that they did it twice.
Mm.
I knew the dance. Yeah. I knew the song off by heart. Oh, my gosh. It was crazy.
Okay. So do you like Spectra Magic better or the Electrical Parade better?
Spectro.
Man, I'm so outvoted in this.
She answered so fast.
I did. And, well, I appreciate Main Street Electrical Parade because of the history of it, just because it's been around for so long. Spectro, I like... just because it's fun, I think it's a little more modern. There's more characters in it that people recognize. Like, people don't recognize, like, Pete's Dragon as much as they would, you know, Snow White and Cinderella.
And, you're right, yeah.
But either way, even if it is Main Street Electrical Parade or Spectra Magic, the Spectra Men, I'm just going to say it, they're creepy. They're creepy.
They are very creepy. See, I like the music for... DEP better than Spectro, just because Spectro, it's the same little da 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 da.
It's
just
so
that little 3/4 kind of. But there's some intricacy to that music in the Baroque hoedown, and I love that.
I love this nerdiness that we're experiencing right now.
I know, right?
Fantastic.
Sure
I've got a confession. I've never been to a Disney park.
Yeah, I'm
not yet.
Great memories, and my memory of Main Street USA is being lost and not knowing where my daddy was. That's my only memory.
And
you guys?
My memory of Main Street Disney is the fact that at the end of the parade, when, because this is California, that's the only one I've been to, was that my little brother, who at the time was 4.5, was trying to get Mickey's attention, and Mickey didn't see him. And my little brother is bawling his head off. Fortunately, Minnie noticed. And Minnie went and tapped him on the shoulder and made Mickey turn around. So there's my little brother bawling his head off. And he gets tapped on the shoulder and he doesn't know who it is. And he turns around and he's still bawling. And he slowly looks up into Mickey's face and then freaks right out.
That's awesome.
But I am waiting for the day when Carrie takes me to Walt Disney World and tours me all around.
I think we should all go.
Yeah.
I am the
Field
best
trip.
Tour guide ever. I think one of my dream jobs would be like a Disney tour guide. I really should have worked for guest relations, and I could have been wearing the plaid and taking the celebrities around, because I would get everyone on every single ride and every single show and every single parade and all the fireworks. I did that with my mom when we went there in like 2007 on vacation, and we saw everything, and she was so exhausted when we got back. She's like, I need a vacation from our vacation.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you got to plan really well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Judging from your talk of your last trip, I think you do.
Well, yeah. Yeah, there's that, too. So, well, that was more, I think it was more the event planning team than us.
Yeah.
But it all worked out.
So I'm going to ask, I don't know, this might be a really easy question because maybe you've imagined it 1,000 times, or it might be a really hard question. But I'm going to ask you to answer it for both Mr. Disney and Mr. Henson, because you have had the extreme luck, or I don't know what word to use for it, to be able to interview Dave Goals and Jane Hunt and
Mad Skills
and Frank Oz and Steve Whitmire and Kevin Clash, and the list goes on and on of who you've gotten to interview, but you won't ever get to interview Mr. Disney or Mr. Henson. But imagine for a moment that you could, and you get to spend, you know, half an hour or so in talking with them. What's like, I want to know, what would be the one burning question, the deep, profound one that you would want to ask them? And it might be different for each person, I don't know. But what would you want to ask those two gentlemen if you got to get them on your podcast, if you could?
Okay. That's really good. And I knew, as soon as you started asking the question, I knew where we were going with this question. So I've been thinking about this for a minute or so.
I was trying to stall there for you.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. So I know what I would ask Jim. So let's start there.
Okay.
And if, because I know more of Jim's early history than I know of Walt's.
Mm-hmm.
But, and my question for Jim, my big burning question for Jim would stem out of his early life, and it would be something to the effect of, I sort of equate that, the question I would ask with Jim is sort of the same thing that I do with songwriting. I've been writing songs and my own music for over 20 years now, ever since I was a really, really little kid. And what I would ask Jim is, you know, as you grew up, entertainment, certainly, I don't think television was really a factor when he was a young child. Mm,
not so much,
around,
no.
Really. So you had entertainment that stemmed from radio,
mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing. And of course, there's, you know, whatever live entertainment you could find around, which was extremely local at that point anyways. But what's the point in his life where mentally he goes from just simply sort of digesting and being entertained by the creations of other people, where does the transition start to not only just wanting to create some of his own entertainment and his own characters, but where does the formation of those early characters come from? What's that influenced by? What are some of his earliest memories that he could equate with turning into his own original creations? Like for me, with music, I very vividly remember the first song that I ever remember hearing, and it happens to be "I Get Around" by the Beach Boys.
Okay.
And I can picture exactly where I am as a little kid listening to this LP on my dad's record player. I mean, I can tell you what the album cover looks like. I could tell you what the label of the LP looks like. And I remember those sounds, and my dad would make mixtapes for me as a kid, and I think that really fed into my early musical sensibilities. And I mean, I could sit here and describe to you how I personally went from just an appreciator of other people's songs to starting to wonder, for some strange reason, gosh, I wonder how people make those songs. I wonder where those come from. How do people make up songs like that, to actually starting to do it, you know, and to making my own music, and now recording it and teaching kids who I was that age, you know, when I started, you know, finding kids that age who come through my door and now teaching them how to do it. But I can tell you how that whole process started for me. And I would want to know, with Jim and Puppets, how the equivalent sort of thing happened. You know, how does he go from a kid just being entertained by these things and these ideas and these audio shows that he has to visualize in his mind, and maybe that's how it happens for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But how does he go from just being a consumer of entertainment to his first steps in really creating his own characters and stories and entertainment for other people? I would be fascinated by that story.
Mm-hmm.
And
everything we've read about him. Sorry, everything we've read about him, it seems like it was so seamless.
Yes.
You know, with all of the journals and such that we have, but I'm sure it would be fascinating to hear him try to pinpoint a moment or a time period or something. That'd be amazing. So with
Absolutely,
Walt?
Absolutely, yeah.
And with Walt, you would say what?
Walt's a lot harder because I don't... I think of Jim Henson more as Jim the man because
right?
I'm aware of more of his... Not only his incredible successes as a creative, you know, giant in what he created, but I also see Jim, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all, but I see him as a little smaller than Walt because I know more about Jim the man
sure.
than I know about Walt the man. I know about Walt the front man for the immense empire that he created.
Right.
You know, and it is more of an empire to Walt's legacy than Jim. Because I think that's just a difference in personal styles and the way that they work. So mm-hmm. I'm aware of more of Jim as a human being. So I my questions for Walt would be probably far more impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just have more to do with things like, with things sort of surrounding the empire that he created. And of course, we do know a little bit about Walt behind the scenes where he wasn't exactly always Uncle Walt, was he?
Right.
And so maybe I would want to know more about that side of him, where...
And would he answer?
And would he answer? That's another really good question, and he probably wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that would probably be more in character. But I would really want to know more about Walt's when he went home for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would want to know more about Walt, just the man, the family man, because... That's the part of Walt that I don't really know about. You know, you can read a book, and there's some very good books that have been written about Walt's life. But we look at Walt so much as the man we saw on TV or the man we saw presenting his idea for Epcot that never happened.
Hmm.
And all that kind of thing.
It kind of happened.
Celebration happened, yes, is absolutely. Kind of but that. His vision didn't quite... You know, it didn't quite happen the way that he may have wanted to see it happen. Mm-hmm. But so much of his heart was poured into those projects. And that's the Walt that I want to know more about, is the Walt that wasn't quite the hard-driving industrialist, that wasn't quite the guy who invented Mickey Mouse, but the guy whose heart and soul went into the Magic Kingdom and went into Epcot and Disneyland and... You know, saw something very special in the stories of Snow White and Peter Pan and Pinocchio, and you know why those stories and what touched his heart
mm-hmm.
that he could be this brilliant industrialist and a hard driving man, but what kind of person still can
tell these
create
lovely
those
stories.
Experiences yeah. that are culturally life altering?
Yeah, I find that. One major strength that both of them had is they were extremely good at bringing good people together.
That's very true.
And
yeah.
It's something I try to do and I try to nurture the strengths I see in people. And
yeah, you
I, do. I try and I'd like to be able to ask both of them, you know, what do you look for? And when do you know? Because sometimes you just meet someone and go, wow, that person would be fabulous in that, you know, to work with us on this next project.
Right.
I think
yeah.
that'd be really neat. You know, like, hey, Jim, when you first met Frank, how did you know? How did you just know?
Because
clearly
exactly.
you just knew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I didn't even think of it like that, but you are absolutely right.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, thank you.
So with all this talk about getting to meet either Jim or Walt and discuss with them, is there anything like that you could have personally witnessed in Disney or Muppet history? Is there anything that you would want to have been there for, to witness firsthand?
Yeah,
and
be the
be
fly
there?
On the wall?
And experience it all as it happened. Anything
oh,
in particular?
Everything. Everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Well, you can't
I mean,
have
I,
everything.
One thing.
You have to pick one.
Only one.
Good luck, Steve.
Okay.
It's going to be awesome. And
I can tie this together for you. I can tie it together with Disney and the Muppets.
There you go.
Sweet. Okay.
Because I would want to have been a fly on the wall with those meetings with Michael Eisner and Jim Henson.
Oh.
Good. Because really, those two men got along. They were not adversarial, from what I understand.
Well, certainly not at first.
Michael Eisner was Michael Eisner, you know, and there's certainly elements of that. And Jim, of course, was a very smart businessman as well. I mean, we all kind of see him as this kind of giggly, hippie kind of guy, but he had to be a smart businessman to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear those conversations,
yeah,
knowing what happened,
yeah,
to hear what the agreements were to start out with, and just to hear, you know, what did they talk about when they went to lunch?
Well, and it was all based on a handshake, and until Michael wanted to have Sesame Street, and then Jim was just no.
yeah. So I really would have wanted to have been around to hear just all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and that sort of my really interested historical side, but. Apart from that, I would have loved to have been in any of the writers' meetings for any of the Muppet Show episodes.
Yeah.
That would have been fun.
I think those would have been so much fun.
I think those first reading.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of footage that we've seen out there. I think to be at the table when they would read through an episode, I think that
would be just
divine.
I'll tell you, I've been there. I haven't been privy to what happens in the writing room. I have seen what happens when they're shooting Muppet TV and movie productions once the director says cut.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never be able to see that stuff anywhere on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's very, very funny and very, very wrong. But that's funny because they allow themselves to go there creatively, at least when the cameras are off.
Yeah.
And,
I only saw.
All I can say is, I really hope Miss Piggy and Kermit are married because, wow.
Thank you for that, Steve.
Wow.
I've just got some mental pictures going on.
Oh, dear.
Dialogue going on in my head.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. let's go someplace, you know, a little safer.
Yeah, especially with us all around.
But yeah, we're just going to stick with this sort of with the Disney and the Muppet thing. I'm sure other people have asked you this, but the answers may not be the same. You're allowed to have, I think, up to four answers for this. In the sense that we would like to know, what is your favorite Muppet, your favorite Disney character, and also which Muppet / Disney character would you say you are most like? Because that may not be the same as your favorite. Because Carrie's favorite is Animal.
Yeah.
And she's somewhat like Animal, but she, you know, she's also like other crazy wacky ones too.
Oh, but, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So, so if you want to break that down, who's your favorite Muppet?
Okay.
As opposed to the one you're most like.
I've got a better answer. Okay, that works. So, my favorite Muppet, I'm going to say, is Dr. Teeth.
Nice.
Yes.
I don't always see him in everything, and he's not like, I mean, I love Kermit. Everybody loves Kermit. Kermit is, you're supposed to love Kermit.
Yep. Yeah, there's something wrong with you if you don't. Yeah.
No, but as far as, apart from Kermit, my favorite Muppet would be Dr. Teeth because he's sort of Jim's weird and wild and fun side.
Yeah.
You know, he's that really kind of weird psychedelic character. He's just really cool. So I love him. But I also sort of equally love the Swedish Chef for different reasons. I mean, it's still Jim, but my dad and I always loved watching the Swedish Chef on The Muppet Show when I was a really little kid. It was on the air, and I don't really remember too many specific episodes of The Muppet Show when I was little, but I do know that I did watch it when it was on the air and that my dad and I loved the Swedish Chef. So,
have you seen his latest rapping video appearance?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
I'm still sort of in shock and disbelief that actually happened.
That
it was actually Bill, and it was really, I mean, that happened, you know? So,
yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, still kind of getting over that. But I actually had to have one of my high school kids explain to me just what the joke was.
Yeah.
Like, Irma Gerd.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
And now again,
I think he's the best part of the whole song, frankly.
Oh, I think so.
So
yeah.
They're lucky to have him.
I do want to know, at what point did the Swedish chef get married?
He's always been married.
He's always been married?
Always been married.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So Dr. Teeth would be my, I guess, my favorite one. Okay. However, I think I most like Rolf.
I said that too. Yeah.
For yourself, right?
Yeah, for me.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, because for me, I feel like I'm like Rolf because he's not really the star of the show. He just kind of likes being able to play his piano and to sing and be kind of happy by himself, you know. He seems like kind of an introvert, and he seems like there's sort of a he can be funny, you know, but there's sort of a quiet soulfulness to Rolf too. Mm-hmm. That I sort of really relate to. So I would say I'm a lot like Rolf. And really, I still, when I get the chance, argue that Jim was more like Rolf than Kermit. Because Jim didn't always necessarily need to be the front man. It didn't always need to be the guy in the center of attention. Mm. And I think there's sort of more of a heart and soul to Rolf that reflects Jim, probably maybe more often than Kermit, although Jim, of course, still gets pegged as Kermit quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And as I'm talking and stalling here, I'm trying to think of the Disney character.
Okay, well, do you have a favorite Disney character?
Yeah, I can tell you my favorite Disney character. And I'm going to count him as all the same character, even though he sort of changes.
Okay.
Which is, he's the guy in the Carousel of Progress. Hmm. Whatever his name is. I forget the guy. You know what I'm talking about.
It's you've stumped all of us, including our Disney cast member here.
I know who you're talking about.
The main character's in the Carousel of Progress, the guy with the mustache, and he sits there for every scene, talks to you. I don't know his name,
but he's the dad in
the Carousel of Progress, yeah.
Well, there you go. Somebody has to email in and tell us what this person's name is.
I'm sure somebody knows, yeah.
Somebody out there will know.
We'll figure it out. It'll be in the description.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll put it there.
Maybe one less obscure. Do you know who Figment is?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll say Figment then if it makes you feel better.
Okay.
Carrie's greeting.
I love Figment too.
Oh, that's awesome. Figment, yeah. for those of you who don't know, Figment is a large purple dinosaur dragon type character who lives at Epcot. And he's the spokesperson for Epcot. Although now it's kind of Duffy's kind of taking over. Have you noticed
that?
Well, yeah, Duffy's adorable though.
I know.
He's a teddy bear. He's Mickey's teddy bear.
I see.
And he's a traveling bear.
Okay.
So. But Figment's awfully cool too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And as far as what character am I like, I am still drawing a blank on that.
Well, there's a lot more to choose from in the Disney world.
There is so much.
Yeah. You know, it's not like you're going to go and say, I'm most like Mickey Mouse. You're not going to say that.
No, you're not. I don't think I'm any of the Fab Five because I wouldn't be Goofy. I could make some sort of self-deprecating joke and say I'm like Goofy, but I'm not really like Goofy.
No.
I'm not that hot-tempered like Donald. so I really don't know. I am not sure what Disney character.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you one and you can say whether or not you like it.
Okay.
But we'll put it out there. I'm going to say that for what you do for the fans of the Muppet Cast, for the information that you've shared, for the digging and the research and all the magic you've created, that for that you get to be Jiminy Cricket.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
So there you go. For guiding a puppet through his journey.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Boom.
Boom.
There it is.
Thank you. That was good, eh?
That was good.
That was really
I think
good.
You had that plan. Yeah.
I did not write that down in my notes.
No.
That was entirely.
I'm going to look through those after.
You can inspect them. I'll even photocopy them and send them to you, Steve, so you know that I did not pre-plan that.
Thank you. I will definitely accept that.
You'll accept that right on.
Yes.
Right on. I think that's a really good one for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Do either of my couch potato friends that's what I was going to call you.
Couch potatoes?
Well, we are on the couch. So.
Yeah. Do either of my couch friends have anything else that they want to ask Steve about?
Yeah. I kind of want to know how, after so many years, after so many podcasts, how you manage to keep it fresh every single time and figure out new things to say, because there's so many that you've got. And
you stole my question.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a joint question.
But I want to know the same thing, too.
Yeah, I don't know how one man can do that. Keep it fresh for so long.
How do I keep coming up with new ideas? Yeah. Pretty much because I don't anymore. And that's actually sort of a serious answer, because I would have no way to keep going. I mean, there are still, you know, a multitude of things and topics that if I was just here all by my lonesome doing it, that I probably could pull out some things to talk about every week. But one of the strengths, I think, of the Muppet Cast as it's come back has been that I've put the show more in the hands of the listeners. If you listen to the recent shows,
mm-hmm.
almost every week there's a different listener joining me on the show to talk about some subject that they're passionate about mm-hmm. on the Muppets. And I think that's sort of become the new mission of the show, and sort of one of the big strengths of it is that it's become more of a celebration, not solely of my fandom, but of all of us fans. Really, and maybe one fan's dream pours into that as well. But I really wanted to get as many people involved and on mic and on the show as possible, just because, again, everyone else loves different things about the Muppets than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, like, for the show that I happen to be putting out this week, it's someone who's a really big Disney fan, but also a big Muppet fan, who I just happened to meet in the park when I was down there last time in early October. And we reconnected over Facebook, and we had an amazing conversation about, and maybe here's one that you guys can think about, and if you have an answer before we're done, I want to hear what you think about this. But if you could hang out with any Muppet character or characters in any dining location or part of Walt Disney World, who would it be and where? And we each had like 20 things to talk about because we just kept thinking of them, you know. But I never would have come up with that idea on my own. But someone brings me this brilliant idea and it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's going to be one of the best episodes we've ever done. Let's get on Skype and do it. And that's what the show is now. One of my other all-time favorite episodes that I actually just recently recorded, and you may remember this show, was someone who's become a good friend named Millie Turk. And mm-hmm. she had a very tumultuous childhood with some things that none of us should really have to go through as children that she went through. But Sesame Street was her rock. And it was sort of her anchor into, there is a place that exists where I am loved and important. And it was literally that serious for her. Mm-hmm. And wow. So it's still... And you go back and listen to her tell her story on the show, and I had an inkling that there was, she told me she wanted to be on the show to talk about this sort of thing, but she didn't go into a lot of detail when we were first just conversing over Facebook. But once she really started talking in the segment, I thought, oh my, it's great to hear that story and to hear how she persevered through that, but that's something that I might never get an email about from another listener, but there might be 100 other people out there who heard her talking and said, that's me too.
Right.
I had that exact same experience. And it helps. Maybe it helps people like that. So I bring listeners on now, not for lack of material or not for lack of anything else, but because it strengthens the show and because it makes it so much more than I could ever make it on just by myself, you know? So that's the focus now. And that's why I don't think I'll ever run out of material, because there's always someone who has either a story or something they love to come on the show and share about it and just make everything even better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just to tie off on that and kind of wrap the thoughts up before we give you our idea of who we'd go for dinner with in Disney World, that question exploded my brain, just so you know.
me too.
Mine too. It was a great question.
Oy. Yeah. Because there's some dangerous answers. Seeing as you've now got 5 years on the Muppet Cast, and because we talk about what people love and what they dream about, 5 years from now when you're still doing the Muppet Cast?
That sounds like an order.
Because you can't
it's never ending.
Because you can't go anywhere. No, but 5 years from now, like what, or not 5 years from now, whatever. What do you dream? What do you hope for One Fan's Dream or the Muppet Cast or, you know, some of your other creative projects that you have in the go? Like if somebody walked into your, you know, knocked on your front door right now, because we can't walk into the room ourselves, but if somebody knocked on your front door and said, "Here, Steve, here's $2 million, go." You know, what would you go and do, or
that question. Okay,
you know, that kind of thing.
Because I was gonna say, like, if you asked me 5 years ago what I wanted the Muppet Cast to be, like, I had no plan then, and I have no plan now. So, so there's that part of it.
That's freeing.
Yeah, well, and that's sort of the thing is I'm not really sure, because I like to keep that sort of creative endeavor up in the air, because. Because I don't look at the Muppet Cast as my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be one of the strengths of the show. And that's, it's always been a way that I've made a special effort to think about it, is the best thing that I do as the host of the Muppet Cast is to get out of the way of my content.
Sure.
The show is not, I don't look at it this way. The show is not about me. Yeah, I'm the host, but we're all here not because we're fans of me, but because we're all fans of the Muppets. And mm-hmm. I just happen to be the one behind the microphone.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 5 years from now, I hope that the Muppet Cast, that, you know, there's still people who just are interested and passionate as I am about the characters and have as much fun enjoying what they create as I do. And hopefully 5 years from now, we've got a lot of new movies and songs and TV yes. shows and, you know, Sesame Street's got even more great stuff that we can celebrate as
yes,
well.
Please.
And the Henson Company comes out with things. And because that's what it's all driven by. It's driven by that content.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know, the content that I create, there's all that other stuff that has to be out there for the Muppet Cast to work. And if 5 years from now, if there isn't anything new from the Muppets, then, you know, the show might still be out there, but it'll be a very different kind of show, because it'll
right.
be all just nostalgia driven.
Muppet yeah. Memory Cast.
And that's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, because we're all there because of what the Muppets were as when we were growing up. And I've said that plenty of times, too. For a lot of us, the Muppets sort of made us into the people we are, especially from the Sesame Street side. Like,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Kermit and Grover and Oscar and all and Big Bird, they taught us about our world and about who we are. And how to live with each other. And so it's really because of that that we still love that show and that we hope our kids grow up loving it too. So I hope there's new stuff to celebrate, because that means that, yeah, we'll always still have new ideas and songs and jokes and skits to celebrate and to play and to, you know, just talk about and have fun talking about on the show.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do a couple more things than I've done with the Muppet Cast, you know, maybe going around and doing, you know, some Muppet fan events around the country or whatnot. My good friends Ryan and Joe from ToughPigs.com, they live in Brooklyn.
Right.
And a couple years ago, I actually made a trip out to New York City and stayed with them for a week. And we did, I believe it was the first Muppet Vault event. And that's still a monthly event that they do in New
yep.
York City.
Yep.
And it's great.
Like,
you know,
I can never be
New
there.
New York, man, you're not going to find a more densely populated area of the world, I don't think. But there, so of course, you're going to find a lot of great Muppet fans living all over the place there. And they mm-hmm. always have a venue to go and, you know, show some stuff. And because everyone lives there, they sometimes have people from the Muppet world who pop in and do special appearances. And it's wonderful what they do. So. I'm really elated that they still have that going, that I was able to be part of at least one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would love to get around the country and do more of those. I really, that was something that I intended to do when I first started the show back up over late summer. And it just, you know, I haven't been able to do it, but, you know, I'd love to go back to Atlanta or Chicago or, you know, Texas or wherever.
Right.
And just do all sorts of, you know, Muppet fan events just to get people together.
Yeah, Muppet meetups.
Yeah, exactly. Muppet right. fan meetups, because you don't just, you know, there's a lot of Disney fan meetups, but guess where they all happen?
Yeah.
Orlando.
Yeah. So there's that. But, you know, with Muppets, there's Muppet fans all over the place, and you can do things with the Muppets that are related just about anywhere you want to go. So that's something that I'd really love to do 5 years from now, if there's time and resources and interest and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
For sure.
Has to be there. But that would be a lot of fun to do. And as far as one fan's dream, I've actually got some plans to change that around in the near future and make it something even better, where it's not just a blog, because I haven't gotten time to post new articles, even though I have so many sort of in the hopper and ideas that I'm writing articles for. But I would love to see that turn into like maybe a monthly web magazine.
Oh, nice.
Where there's sort of a theme every month to the articles that me and my giant staff of writers come up with. And, you know, maybe even branching out into video series, and if there's time, maybe even do its own sort of podcast.
Right.
Where it's a lot more, not motivational, but it's more, personality driven into what people need to live more meaningful lives and whatever that means. So
we need that.
So that's what I kind of hope that turns into.
We need that person to knock on your door.
I think we do.
Here you go, Steve. Here's the money. Do it.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. Yeah.
Carrie, do you have an answer for him as to who you'd take to dinner and where?
Yeah, totally. As soon as he said that, I was like, oh my God, I totally know. And then as you were talking, I was like, oh, there's other ones too. First, I would not take Animal anywhere.
Okay.
I would I would want to, because he's my favorite, but I'm not taking him anywhere. He can stay home. He has to. He just causes too much destruction. I would take my second favorite Muppet somewhere, who is Floyd. I would take Floyd to the sci-fi drive-in at the studios, where we could sit and throw ice cubes and popcorn and yell at the bad B-movie trailers going on.
Very nice.
See, having not been to Disney World, I can't give you locations.
Sure, yeah.
And of course, I immediately was like, okay, Disney World, rides, craziness, gonzo. But you'd be in so much trouble, because I'm afraid of all those scary rides, and he would make me go on them. Well, and he'd make me go on them without the safety belt and you know, while hanging on to a large tire and, you know, singing crazy songs and stuff like that. So I don't know, my brain just exploded. I think I'd rather sit with Kermit and watch all of the rest of them have a good time. I think that's what I would want to do.
If you're gonna people watch with anyone, Kermit would be
the best option.
Yeah, so long as he was in disguise, because otherwise no one would leave us alone.
He'd get mobbed.
Yeah.
You could take Kermit to either Typhoon Lagoon or Blizzard Beach and float in the Lazy River.
Oh, okay, there.
And
there
relax.
Yes, done. Done. Okay, Matt.
I would take Miss Piggy to a bakery. And
oh wow, that's great. Oh, I wish I'd thought of that.
I love it.
Her and I would have a nice spot of tea, and all the pastries we wanted.
Everything dusted with powdered sugar.
Exactly. And she, in my ideal world, she would control herself, and not go a little crazy.
You'd just have to tell her in advance so she could, like, pick up the right outfit.
Exactly. She'd have to know a few weeks in advance to have something tailored.
I'm sorry. In your ideal world, she would control herself. That is just... I'm sorry.
Because I would like some conversation.
Well, you'd have conversation on the way there.
True.
And then
about her favorite subject. Moi.
Exactly. Luke, who would you want? Goodness. Where would you go?
Well, see, like I was saying, Ralph is definitely my favorite, and that's because I identify with him. I just want to hang with him, man, because I figure because he doesn't get a lot of the spotlight, he's doing cool, relaxing things.
There's
got to
be a piano bar somewhere.
Exactly.
There is Jelly Rolls.
See,
well, there we go.
Just go hang.
I'd take Ralph to Jelly Rolls, and we'd just hang.
See, and then Kermit and I would swing by for a grasshopper.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and
you're really close to one of mine.
Yeah, and yours was.
All right, so I'm going to give you some of the highlights, because at this point, when people hear this, the episode for the Muppet Cast will have come out. So go back and listen to episode 230, and you'll hear all of this. But here's some of my highlights, okay? Because I'm not going to give you all 20 of these, because that could take forever. But,
no, okay.
So some of the dining ones, I had Cinderella's Royal Table with Kermit the Frog.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, the flagship restaurant or the flagship park, you've got that has to be Kermit.
Well, besides the frog, he's a prince.
Absolutely.
You have to wear his tuxedo.
But my other favorite place to eat at the Magic Kingdom is the Crystal Palace, the big buffet place
with Winnie the Pooh.
And so I would have to take Rizzo the Rat because
yes.
he's such an appetite.
Of course.
That, one of the few places that could quench that appetite. So there's that. let's see. Other dining places. So there's two restaurants on Disney property that the staff is sort of paid to mess with you a little bit.
Yes.
And they sort of heckle you, and they don't really make fun of you, but they kind of give you the business, you know?
I know who you're taking there.
And, well, there's two places. There's Whispering Canyon and the 50s Primetime Cafe. 50s and I could go either place with Statler and Waldorf.
Of course. Of course.
So there's that. I thought this is my funniest one, where I would take... so the Mexico Pavilion in Epcot has a tequila bar in it now. Mm. And that is where I would take Scooter because he's probably just barely old enough to drink. And I would really enjoy buying Scooter his first margarita and then maybe his second and third.
Oh, dear.
Because I'm sure he has plenty of great stories he could then tell me about working backstage at the Muppet Show.
Absolutely.
You could take him drinking around the world.
I could. I really could there, yeah.
In a little passport book and everything.
My attractions, like my actual rides, I would take Miss Piggy on Expedition Everest because I just know that she'd freak out. There's a TV special called The Muppets at Walt Disney World where Beauregard dragged Miss Piggy on all the roller coasters and she just hated it. So I would have to take Miss Piggy on Everest.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest one for me to think about, though, and if you've been to Walt Disney World, this is a good question to ask. Who would you watch Muppet Vision 3D with?
It was really hard for me because
who would you?
I would want to have all the penguins around me so that when it was done, I could throw them in the air.
That's a good one. That's definitely a good one.
Because the rest of them, I want to see them on stage doing their job.
Yeah, sure.
Otherwise,
sure.
If they're sitting with me, they can't be doing their job entertaining me.
It was a really hard one for me to think about. I first thought Kermit just because I couldn't think of a good answer, and Kermit's usually kind of a go-to, you know. But when I was in high school, one of my very best friends worked in the projection booth at a local movie theater, and so I got to go up and watch a lot of movies from the projection room. And so I thought, you know what? That's the one seat I haven't sat in to watch Muppet Vision 3D because I've seen it a billion times from every point in the theater.
Okay.
But you know what? I've never seen it from up at the projection booth with the Swedish chef.
Of course.
Beautiful.
there's that. I would have to... So I've got sort of another funny twofer here.
Yeah.
I would take Sam Eagle to watch the American Adventure Show.
Oh, I was going to say, would you take him to the Hall of Presidents?
Well, no. See, the other person that I was doing the segment with, she took him to the Hall of Presidents. And then it was just like, oh, good, because I'm taking him to the American Adventure.
There you go.
But here's the thing. Sam Eagle is coming with me actually to see the American Adventure show, but Wayne and Wanda are coming with me to watch the Voices of Liberty and actually hear what good singers sound like.
Oh, poor Wayne and Wanda. They're so bad.
I took 80s Robot to go see Captain EO, naturally. Now, my favorite Walt Disney World ride, though, is Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, hands down, it's just my favorite. I love the Haunted Mansion, but Pirates is my ride, okay? And so that's another really hard one for me. It's like, wow, I've got to find someone really good and funny to go with me on Pirates of the Caribbean. And you've all seen the movie Muppet Treasure Island, right?
Yep. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So now, joining me on my ride of the Pirates of the Caribbean are three characters. Old Tom, real old Tom,
Tom.
Dead Tom.
Yeah, we should let you know that just last year, when the resurgence of my, or the resurfacing of my
Muppet
insanity came through was when I was directing some of these people in a production of Treasure Island.
And I played Tom Morgan. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yes, he was dead Tom by the end
Quite
of it.
Quite dead.
Dead Tom.
Yeah.
Very dead.
Yeah. And our stage manager, set designer, as his final show gift to everyone was cards of pictures of themselves and their corresponding Muppet Treasure Island parts.
Yep.
And partners. Nice. So so there was lots of Muppet references
in our
production.
I just thought of where I can take Animal. I don't have to leave him home. Oh. I can bring him with me. We can go on Stitch's Great Escape.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
Because he'll just get up there with Stitch and destroy everything.
There you go.
I think that's, and plus any time that you can strap animal down to a chair is probably smart, at least for a little while.
Yeah, exactly.
Made for each other.
Well, and that's the thing. I was just like, in a, like a steel cage match, who would come out victorious, Animal or Stitch?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
See, these are all things that Disney should make happen. Like, you should be able to go to these events, and these Muppets should just be there.
I think so. Well, and see, that's the thing is we assign so much personality to these Muppet characters.
Yeah.
I think even more so in some cases than Disney characters, because the Muppet characters, and to me, they're a bit more real because they exist in our world.
Yes. They can actually be in the room with us.
They can actually be in the space with us, and you can converse with them.
Yeah.
Steve Whitmire gave a brilliant talk a few years ago in Atlanta on this, where he did an entire weekend just giving workshops at the Center for Puppetry Arts there in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be fortunate enough to go down there to cover that. And mm-hmm. he gave a great talk about when Disney was first actually purchased the Muppets. He was part of the initial couple guys to get in front of all the Disney executives and say, okay, here's what you've purchased. Here's what the Muppets are and what they are not. And here's what makes them special in the Disney family. Here's what differentiates them from some of your other characters and why you can't just have a Kermit meetup in the parks. Those sorts of things, you know, like Kermit is one, there's one Kermit. Just like there's one Cinderella, of course, and one Mickey, but there really is one Kermit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the difference is Kermit can remember who you are, and he can remember if he met you yesterday, and because it's one performer.
Well, and he remembers who he performed with in 1972.
Right, exactly, because
that, he knows.
Because that person is there, absolutely. Yeah. So there, and it was just really brilliant on the, you know, these characters are a bit more real than what you're used to having, Disney. And so it was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And then he bought me breakfast the next day, and we talked about Bohemian Rhapsody. But that's a different...
I think Karis is turning green with envy.
It's true though. Well, Steve, this has been such fun, such a joy. I'm sure we could go on for like hours and hours, but
I know.
You know, then it becomes a really long podcast. and the whole idea is for people to listen to it on their long drive to work. We're going to sign off at this point, and we'll thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to say, I hope that sometime we can have you back or have you up to visit us if we have some cool event going on here that's worthy of getting you up from Columbus, because it would be great to have you here.
Yeah. Oh, it would be my pleasure. And thank you so much. This has been so much fun. You guys, I love listening to your show. You guys do a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen out there in listening land, thank you for joining us for The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. Please, if you haven't given a listen, go over to The Muppet Cast. You can find him on iTunes. You can find him at MuppetCast.com. You can email him at me@MuppetCast.com.
Oh, that's
your line. I say it with you in the car every day.
I think a lot of people do. Like when I talk to people, when I meet people in the park, like, and I give my email address, like, they expect me to do it like that.
and because life should be more fun.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
All of that stuff. He's also on Twitter, so give him a follow there. And honestly, do give a listen to, just dip in once or twice. He's got lots that you can choose from. And thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Sing a song, sing out loud, sing out strong.
Sing of good things, not bad. Sing of happy, not sad.
Sing a song, make it simple to last your whole life long.
Don't worry that it's not good enough for anyone.
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at thelovers, thedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and you.